Good morning, and or I guess good afternoon, evening, depending on when you're listening. And welcome to Lectionary at Lunch, the seventh Sunday after the Epiphany. We're continuing on through 1 Corinthians here today, 3:10 through 23. Actually, we're going straight through, aren't we? And next week is 4:1 to 13, I believe is the text. And then we're completed. We finished that section of 1 Corinthians for the lectionary this year. And hopefully you'll have another speaker after that. As fun as this is, other things to do. So anyway, here you've noticed in 1 Corinthians 1 to 4, Paul is talking, of course, about leadership and divisions over leadership and problems that result theologically and of course, within their community. Sometimes he's talking to the leaders themselves, and sometimes he's talking to the congregations. And you see this here in this pericope. In 10 to 17, he's talking primarily to the leaders, although the congregation is certainly listening in, especially at the end. 18 to 23, he talks more to the congregation and not to the leaders. So in your preaching, you might find it more directly relevant to talk or preach on 18 and 23, but I think a lot is helpful here anyway. Verse 9 sets up this section. So we are co-workers of God, the workers, the laborers, Paul and Apollos. Then the congregation, you are field of God, building of God. Notice the key again, it's all God's, whether it's the workers or the church itself, all are owned by God. And that's what he will clarify then in verses 10 to 17. What does it mean to be the building of God? Or more specifically, the temple of God. So, verse 10. Kata ten karen tu theu ten dothesan moi. Let's do that first. According to the... Now, charis, we often simply translate as grace, real kind of default translation. But in Paul's letters, it often means gift. So you have charismata in chapter 14, spiritual gifts. And I think that's really what he's getting at here. According to the gift of God, which was given to me. So it's not the grace, you know, kind of grace, undeserved kindness, but the gift of God, which is the work in the kingdom, right? So the gift is his service. The gift is his role as a builder, as he'll say. Dothesan, the aorist participle from didymi. The grace of God, which is given to me. You got to go to the verb at the end of the clause here. So, hasaphos architecton themelion etheka. Etheka is the aorist from tithemi, and I think the variant probably will make it a perfect. Yeah, some manuscripts, especially the majority text, turn that into a perfect tense, which maybe makes a little more sense, and that's why they changed it. As a wise builder, as a sophos architecton, I built a foundation, a themelion, which is the name of a journal, actually, interestingly. But as a wise builder. Now, wise and foolish, we're going to pick up in 18 to 23. And, of course, this echoes chapter 1, where we have the wisdom of God. So, you know, Paul, you got to pick up the previous. Paul is co-worker of God. And from on that basis, he is a wise builder. It's not of himself. It's because of the gift that God has given him. Okay, verse 11. And you know, it was necessary. This is the only foundation. Themelion gar alon udes, dunitai, thenai paraton kemenon, hasestin Jesus Christos. So, for there is nothing other, themelion alon, or udes alon themelion, there is no other foundation, dunitai, able thenai to be built. That's a fun one. The infinitive there, or to be placed. There's no other foundation able to be placed. So the infinitive is a complementary infinitive. It completes the thought of dunitai, to be able. So another foundation is able to be built apart from ton kamenon. Kamenon, the present participle from kamai, apart from the one that has been laid. So Paul lays on the foundation, or Paul builds a foundation, but the foundation he builds is the one which is already laid, who is Jesus Christ. Hus, the nominative, singular, masculine, relative pronoun. I guess in English you have to switch to which because the antecedent is foundation. So there's no other foundation which is laid, which is Jesus Christ. But they use the masculine because the referent is Jesus there. All right, so there's only one foundation. And again, this goes back to chapter 1, 18 to 20, well, the end of the chapter. Okay. Verse 12, Eidetis epoikodome epitain themelion chryson arguron lithus timius xula corton kalamein. But if someone builds upon the foundation, and then you kind of got to pause here, and you might have to fill in a word, whether it be or something like this, and then he's got this list, and it's in descending order, notice. Gold, silver, precious stone, wood, grass, straw. So in descending order of sort of value or permanency, maybe put it that way. Yeah, value, I guess. There's not a lot of difference really between grass and straw. Grass corton, you know, it's kind of the grass of the field, not grass like we have with our, you know, Scott's turf builder kind of stuff, but grass, you know, in the field, in the straw kind of hay kind of stuff. All these are things which you might use to build, I suppose, but not all are going to be as durable or valuable. So the point being, you're building upon the foundation, and some of the upper works are going to be better than others. So there is a differentiation among the value. Notice he's working with this building metaphor all along here now from verse 9. And the metaphor you got to run with here, understand, is Paul is sort of, well, or put it this way, God is sort of the builder, I guess. I've never had a house built, but God is the builder, and then you subcontract other people to do work for you, and some of that work is going to be good, and some of it's not going to be so good. So, your electrical contractor, how's his work? Your plumbing contractor, how's his work? Your drywall contractor, how's his work? Your flooring contractor, how's his work? So you have all kinds of people working, all under the direction of the master builder. Some of their work is going to be valuable, and some of it is not going to be valuable. So that's verse 13. Yeah, this is kind of an interesting verse. Hekastu ton ergon phaneron genesitai. For the work of each, genesitai, future tense here, will be evident, apparent. So you're going to find out about the work of each eventually. You move into the house, you're going to find out that some of the drywall was the joints were cracked or the taping job wasn't very smooth or something. You're going to find out eventually. Now, when will you find out? Hagar himera de losse hate empere apokalyptetai. For the day, and then de losse, another future tense from de lao, the day will reveal. The day will make known. Now, some translations I noticed, I was working on this passage a while back, actually capitalize the word day. So the day of the Lord will make it known. I wonder if that's actually a little too specific, that there's a day of testing. That is to say, when you turn the pipes on, you're going to find out if it leaks. When you put wallpaper over the wallboard, you're going to find out if it's smooth or not. When you flip a switch or plug something into the outlet, you're going to find out if it's properly grounded or not. So I'm a little hesitant to say this is only the eschatological day because, again, Paul is judging people, the leaders in Corinth, for their causing division now. So their work is evident already in the church in Corinth. And it's not just on the last day that it gets revealed. Also on the last day, when it's determined whether or not this work was sure or not. but even prior to that. And there's a connection also to chapter 10 where Paul talks about, you know, there's no testing that has come upon you except that which is normal. God will give you the exit. You know, there's constant testing. Israel underwent testing. So there's, I'm hesitant to just make this an eschatological thing. And I think that's really the point Paul is making here. It's evident now among you that there are divisions, so something isn't working right. And so it's made clear now that things have to change. So I'm just talking myself into, I guess, reading this as happening every time there's a test, every time there's a challenge, not just eschatologically. Now, of course, also eschatologically on the last day, but also whenever God's people fail, whose fault is it? Well, I guess it's the pastor's, right? In pretty significant ways, which is what Paul's getting at here. I don't know if you want to preach on that, but there you go. The day will make it known. And then hati en peri apokalyptitai, for in fire or by fire it will be revealed. See, and again, fire here is, you know, the testing by fire, testing for genuineness. First Peter has the same kind of motif, and it's not just a last day thing. It's whenever a fire happens, whenever a test happens, whenever the heat is turned up, then you know whether or not it's genuine. And now you see the sequence. Gold is refined by fire. Silver is refined by fire. Precious jewels survive the fire, I guess. But what about wood or straw or grass? Not going to survive the fire very well, right? So then, kai hekastu ta ergon hapoyon, Estin tapur ata dokamase. And the work of each person. Now here again, he's talking about the leaders, Paul and Apollos, going back to 3:1-9. The work of each, whatever hapoyon, from hapoyos, it's an indefinite pronoun, whatever it is, whatever kind of work it is, the work of each, whatever it is, whether it's wood, straw, whatever, the fire dokamase will test it. So the fire will test whatever kind of work it is. You might be able to paper it over, but it will be found out. Something will happen that will show its genuineness, its faithfulness. Is it the proper building upon the foundation? Okay? So verse 14. E tenas ta ergon mene ha apokadomesen. So if ta ergon, the work of someone, tenas the genitive from tis, if the work of someone remains, ha epoikodomesen, what he built up. So if the work the work which he built up remains, okay, the work which he built up, yeah, remains, good. Misthon lempsitai, he will receive, future tense, he will receive, from lambano, reward, wages. See, there's your subcontractor language here. He will receive wages. he's going to get his paycheck. Okay. So, verse 15. E tenas ta ergon katakaesetai zemiothesetai atas de sothesetai hutas de has dia paras. But if the work of someone is destroyed, katakaio, is burned up, is consumed, zemiothesetai. Now, this is an interesting one. It's a future passive from zemiao. He will suffer loss, that is, financial loss. He won't get his wages. He won't get paid. Ataste, but he will be saved, but in this way, hutas, as through fire. So he'll make it through by the skin of his teeth. He won't be, you know, shot like mafia style or something. He just won't get a paycheck, is the point here. So again, the issue here is not eternal salvation. This is not a purgatory kind of thing. Paul is talking about the leaders and the work, the teaching, the Christ-centered life that is described, that is taught, built on the foundation of Christ. Is it what Christ wanted? Is it of God, or is it of yourself? If it's of God, it endures, and you will receive your wages. If it is not of Christ, it will not endure, and you will not receive your wages. But it will be revealed. Okay. So again, he's not talking about individual Christians and did they do enough good stuff to earn a salary and get into heaven. He's talking about those who serve the gospel. Is their work faithful or is it not faithful? What is the foundation upon which you build and what do you build up? Pretty challenging word for pastors, obviously. Well, I guess we'll hold off on that. I don't know if you can preach this to your people, but it might be worth a try. So they understand what the pastoral office actually is. Why do you preach the way you do? Why do you have to preach law sometimes? It's because there's a foundation and you're building upon it. You don't have the option. And if you are not faithful to what you've been given to do, why do it? You're not doing it of God. So pretty challenging stuff here. So verse 16, ukoidata. One of Paul's favorite phrases in 1 Corinthians. Do you not know? Are you so stupid? Hati naos theu esta, kai to pneuma tu theu oike en humin. So you notice there's a bit of a paragraph here, and now he's talking congregationally again. Do you not know that you are temple of God and that Spirit of God dwells, well, here it's interesting, among you, in you. In America, we think in you means like in me personally, in myself, and somebody else has a spirit living in them. But it's difficult to capture the corporate dimension of this. You know, if you're a building built up together, very similar to the body language you have in 1 Corinthians 12, if you're a building built up together, that building houses somebody. Somebody dwells in there. God dwells in there. And so it is not the Spirit lives in you individually, but the Spirit lives in you as his church. Make sure you bring out that corporate dimension. I'm not sure quite how you translate that. Who dwells among you, that's not right, but who dwells in you as a building is the point, not in you as an individual. So 17. Etistan naan tu theu phthere tutan hatha us. Great phrase. 17. But if someone destroys from Pharaoh the temple of God, phthere, present tense, the circumflex tells you that something's dropped off with your epsilon contract. So it's a future tense. God will destroy that one, that person. One of these sharp divine condemnations. You notice the kind of pyramid structure to that. Strong condemnation is at work here. It's not sort of a tit for tat, but it's a warning. It's a rebuke. If you destroy the temple, now who is destroying the temple? It's the builders, right? By their shoddy work, then God will destroy that guy. That's the problem. For Hagar Naas tu theu Hagias Estin, Hoitinus Esta Hemes. For the temple of God is holy, is pure, is his own possession, bought at a price. Hoitinus, whoever you are. Hoitinus, indefinite relative pronoun. But again, in English, we don't use pronouns the same way, so you have to do something like the temple of God is holy, which you are the temple of God. So don't mess with it. All right. So strong warning to teachers, to leaders. Very strong warning. And what are you building? What are you putting up? How is your work? Is it good work or is it not good work? Just an encouragement. Or you know, it's challenging work. The work of the gospel, obviously, and a constant. A constant thing that we need to do is to ask ourselves, you know, why are we doing this? What are we trying to accomplish by this? Is it for my sake or is it for the sake of the gospel? Am I doing this just to get people to like me or to not be turned off, rather than will it actually serve them? That's the challenge of pastoral teaching, pastoral care. Here it's a law, I hate to tell you, a law statement. If you do it wrong, you ain't going to get paid. There's no glory. There's no recognition by God of your work. You might as well, you know, be a plumber rather than a pastor. Challenging stuff. 18. Medes hauton ex apetato. That's a great word, ex apetato. Potato. Anyway, no one deceive himself. So third person imperative, strong assertion, command. No one deceive yourself. Or do not deceive yourselves. It's maybe just the best way to say it in English. Etistoke sophasenai en humin en ta aeone tuta maraskenesto. So if someone seems to be wise among you in this age, so now we're hearkening back to chapter 1 again, the wisdom of this age is foolishness to God. So if someone seems to be wise in this age, persuasive, has a good following, maraskenesto, let him become moronic. Let him become an idiot. Let him become foolish. Why? Hina genetai sophos. In order that he may become wise. Wise, that is, using the definition of chapter 1. God's wisdom. The foolishness of the cross is the wisdom of God. So that's the building. That's the structure. 19. Hagar Sophia tu kosmu tuto. Tutu Moria para totho estin. And so now we're back to chapter 1 again. For the wisdom of this world is foolishness before God. Gegraptai gar ha drasomenos tu safus en te panorgia aton. A lot of fun words here. So now the about the congregation. Drasomenos. For the one who catches the wise in their all workings, panorgia, that's from pan and erga, usually in all their schemings or something like that. Now, it's a participle. The referent here is God in Job, as you see in the reference. For it is written, the one who catches the wise one in their schemings. Translation, you probably have to make that into an indicative verb, something like he catches the wise in their schemings. But, you know, if you connect it to 19, or the first part of 19, it might make better sense. Let's try this. For the wisdom of this world is foolishness before God, about whom it is written, the one who catches the wise in their schemings. Is kind of how that works. All right, verse 20. So God is going to catch you. And this goes back to the first part of the pericope. 20. Kai palin. Kyrios genoske tus dialogismus ton sophon hati esin mataioi. And again, another passage. And you notice Psalm 93. The Lord will know the reasonings, the thought processes of the wise, that they are mataioi, that they are useless, empty. The Lord knows the reasonings of the wise of this world. Paul actually substituted, you notice in your apparatus, the psalm actually reads anthropon. Paul uses Safon, which is not capitalized because it's Paul's own insertion, to emphasize the point. So he quotes the passage as it means, not as it literally says, which is perfectly legal to do. All right. So as a result, Hosta, since God is going to catch you, right, since God is going to get you in the end anyway, sooner or later, maybe sooner, as we saw up earlier, Hosta medes kaukasto en anthropois. As a result, no one boast in people. or again, this third person imperative, do not boast in people. I am of Paul, I am of Apollos, back to chapter 1, back to earlier in chapter 3, do not boast in people. And now some great gospel finally. Panta gar humon estin, for all things are yours. What things, for example? 22, eta Apollos, eta Kephas. Whether Paul or Apollos or Cephas, we are yours. We are your servants. We are your slaves. We are owned by you to be used by you for the work of God. Now, that's a good pastoral insight, I think. Don't boast in people. Don't think it's the leader that makes it. We are your slaves. Slaves of Christ. Wow. And then he continues. Eta kosmos, eta zoe, eta thanatos, eta enostota, eta melanta, panta hemon. And now Paul gets cosmological on us here. So everything is yours. You will inherit the earth, to use Sermon on the Mount terminology. God has given all things to Christ for the church, Colossians, Ephesians. So everything is yours, whether it's the servants, people, or it's the world, or life on the last day, now and on the last day, or death, or the present things, anastota, a nice perfect participle from anestemi, or the coming things, the things about to be. All things are yours. You are heirs of the promises of God, to use Galatians language. All things are yours. He has given us all things in Christ. And then, to finish it off, but you are of Christ, and Christ of God. Now, you almost would rather have, now, de, of course, is a very unmarked particle. It can mean all sorts of things. You almost get a consequential or a inferential particle going on here. So, all things are yours. I'd almost rather have you say, for you are of Christ. This is why all things are yours. It's not an adversative. It's not a disjunctive. So all things are yours, but you are of Christ. I don't know how the translations do this. Rather, all things are yours, for you are of Christ, and Christ is of God. And this reflects the structure of creation. You see this in 1 Corinthians 11. Paul lays out the same thing, God, Christ, husband, wife. Same thing in Philippians, where Jesus accomplishes his work to the glory of God the Father. And it's all there. So all is ours because we belong to God. Now, don't separate that off from the rest of the pericope, of course. The reason Paul brings in this reminder that all things are ours is not a sort of a name it and claim it promise, but so that we do not turn aside to things that are not enduring, to leadership principles, to charismatic, you know, leaders as the basis of our church, as the basis of our fellowship. No, it's God himself who, through Christ, has given us all things, including those who teach and preach. So, you know, I don't know if you could really preach this in a practical, relevant way to most congregations. I do think it would be beneficial to hear some sermons about pastors every once in a while. Why does a pastor do what he does? Why does he focus on what he does? Why does he teach on what he does? And what are the consequences of not teaching properly? Why does he have to teach and preach the hard things? Those, I think, are worth some discussion. And coming at this humbly, and an acknowledgement that you are the congregations. You are indeed gift of God, but you are there for the congregation and in a very real sense owned by them as you are owned by Christ. And so to reinforce the nature of your work among God's people might be a helpful thing. In a Bible study, you might have some good opportunity to reflect on this, and especially where congregations have been hurt, where there's been poor leadership in the past, when pastors have caused problems, they know firsthand that the work will reveal itself. And the breakup, the hardship that happens as a result, it's not just an eschatological thing. It's not just the last day where this is revealed. It causes real hurt and pain, and a reminder to the congregation from God's word what your work is would be a good thing. Well, blessings in your service to Christ and his people. See you next week.